What is up and welcome into the Locked On Chargers podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Wade, joined as always with David Drogemeyer, my co-host, two writers from San Diego Sports Domination, San Diego's top sports blog, who have been covering the Chargers for four seasons now, doing our own Facebook live show, Chargers Domination Live, which airs weekly. And this is our second season with the Locked On Chargers podcast, bringing you your team every day. Well, on today's show, we have a lot to talk about. We do have a little bit of news, and we're going to answer another fan question in the first segment because there was one that got asked after we recorded, so we didn't get to talk about it on the last show. And then for the second and third segment of the shows, John Kegley, of course, our other co-host, was able to have a talk with Matt Williamson about the Chargers in general, and they had a really great talk over at Locked On NFL. Matt Williamson, former ESPN analyst, now is the host of the Locked On NFL podcast and does great work over there. And he got to talk with John about the Chargers and the state of the offseason and everything else. So that's going to be the final two segments of the show. It is on Locked On NFL as well, but we're going to put kind of an edited, condensed version on here for those who didn't get to hear it over there so that they get to be involved with it as well. So let's go ahead and get into the first topic for today, which is a couple of Chargers had some injuries. One was a couple of weeks ago. One was really recent, and that was Nazir Adderley was injured in practice. We don't know what the injury is yet because it's an undisclosed injury, David. And then Derek Watt had shoulder surgery a couple of weeks ago, according to Eric Williams, and he is rehabbing from that as well. And there's no timetable on either of their recoveries. The Nazir Adderley one is definitely the scarier one for me, I guess, just because he did have the issues on his pro day of pulling a hamstring. And you just don't want that to really sideline him for much of camp, just because we saw what happened with Joey Bosa when he kind of just had to go get thrown into it. And then he got hurt right away his rookie season. So when I tell you about, you know, both of those injuries, I know Derek Watt's a fullback, but does either of those really concern you at this point?
Well, we don't know the extent of the Nazir Adderley injury. Obviously, that one is definitely concerning just because we don't know. I mean, you always fear the unknown. I mean, and we just have a lack of information on what's going on with him. I mean, Anthony Lynn doesn't like talking about injuries, and he doesn't talk about them even more in the offseason. So hopefully Nazir Adderley takes the time between OTAs and training camp, and he gets himself right and is able to be 100% going into camp. Now, as far as Derek Watt's concerned, I think that was more of a, you know, maybe a minor procedure. I mean, that's everything that I've read about it. And they expect him to be ready to go sometime into training camp. So that one I'm not so worried about. Obviously, the rookie, you just don't know what's going on. So, yeah, you got a little bit of concern.
Yeah, of course, there's going to be some concern. And I do want to note that they said that he was practicing kind of on the side by himself, doing kind of individual type of things. We don't know the extent of what that was, but obviously if they're holding him out of the main practice, he has something going on. But yeah, we'll learn more about that as we go. And hey, shoulders are very important for fullbacks. You know, you got to get your hands on linebackers, but it's still June, so I'm not worrying too much about these injuries right now. I just hope that in Nazir Adderley's case, he can get through it. He takes the time to make sure it's really right before he comes back and possibly makes it worse. So that's my only concern there. And now I do want to get into another fan question that we didn't get to get into on the last show. And it's from Sean Peck, who kind of asked three questions. So we'll do a little mini recap of all these questions. So we have, what are we doing about our punter? He was garbage last year. I agree. Donnie Jones is his name. Should the Chargers re-sign Gates, basically, he's asking. And why no Sue or McCoy? So on the last shows, a few shows ago, we talked about the Gerald McCoy and how they probably weren't getting him. And when Ndamukong Suh signed with the Buccaneers, we talked about, you know, why the Chargers wouldn't get him or didn't get him. And that was basically, it came down to money. So I think with McCoy and with Suh, yes, you would love those players. Yes, theoretically, the Chargers have the cap space to sign those guys to a one-year deal, but it would eat up such a huge portion and leave them with so little left after that. It makes it uncomfortable if they have to make another move if there's an injury or something else, because it's so early in the offseason. But David, I just don't think they were willing to put themselves in that kind of salary cap hell, being that limited in space, to go and sign one of those guys, even if it would have greatly benefited the team.
Yeah, no, it definitely would have greatly benefited the team. They're two, you know, fantastic defensive linemen who have created great careers for themselves in the NFL. Those are the type of players you always want to have on your team. But the money was always going to be the problem here. The Chargers, like you said, would have been super hamstrung if they would have signed either one of these guys. And Tom Telesco is the type of general manager that likes to have a little bit of wiggle room. That just in case, you know, somebody in September notably gets cut, you know, maybe he can swoop in and grab them. So I think that's more his MO than signing, you know, the big name guys. That's just not what you're really going to get here with the Chargers. But yeah, I mean, I think it was always a dream, but now we can finally put those both to rest.
We were all in favor of it, but we just were thinking it was probably unrealistic, even when the Chargers were kind of mentioned near Gerald McCoy, but it just never really was going to happen. So there is another question from Sean Peck, and he basically just said re-sign Gates. So I'm guessing he's asking if we should re-sign Gates. So let's go ahead and get into that. We've talked about it a little bit before. I am kind of on the fence about it. I don't really necessarily think they need it. Obviously, with the Hunter Henry injury last season, you needed him. I mean, you absolutely needed him. But now with him coming back, you have Virgil Green, and then a really big question mark at the third tight end position. So I could see why they would think about it, but the production hasn't been great from Antonio Gates the last couple of seasons, even if he did make some big plays in some big moments. But David, really, when it comes down to it, I'm just asking you this. Should the Chargers re-sign Antonio Gates?
Should the Chargers re-sign Antonio Gates? Unfortunately, I don't think so. I just think that, you know, at this point, Antonio Gates, he's going to expect the ball. And unfortunately, he's really, you know, a third string tight end at this point, just because he just doesn't have the speed. He has very little separation. His connection with Phillip Rivers, obviously, that's a Hall of Fame type of connection. But unfortunately, as much as the fan in me wants the Chargers to re-sign Antonio Gates, looking at it from just a strict business position, from a front office mindset, I think the answer is no.
Well, and he would be the third tight end here, and you could use him just for passing downs and have Virgil Green basically just for running plays. But that's the other thing about Antonio Gates is he's really not bringing you much in run blocking right now at his age, which is something very important. I think something the Chargers value in their tight ends with the way that they think, really, that they just want to run the ball on every play, even though it never ends up that way. I think they want a more versatile player there. And as much as it sucks, you know, because the fans love Antonio Gates and he's one of the greatest tight ends of all time, I think there's a scenario which it can work, but I just don't see it being likely. And I don't think it would work out the way we'd want it to if he was to come back. It'd probably be sadder than it would be happy. And I just don't want to see Antonio Gates go out that way. But there's one more question here about the punter talk. Everyone loves punter talk. And we are the leading Chargers analyst when it comes to talking about punting, because it seems that we talk about punters every few shows. But the Chargers have a gap right now between punters because Donnie Jones has not been re-signed. Thank God, who is basically re-signed because of his holding skills on field goals and PATs rather than his actual ability to punt a football. He just never really got back into shape last year after he kind of came from sitting on the couch. So the Chargers don't have Johnny Jones anymore. And now basically the only guy in camp that they have is the undrafted rookie out of Notre Dame, who we talked to Jack Nolan about, and just talking about his personality and the type of leadership that he brings out of special teams. I think if he was to make the team, he would be a better punter than Donnie Jones. He's the only guy right now. So I think right now it's his job to lose, but I wouldn't be surprised, David, if they brought somebody in to kind of compete with him for that job.
Yeah, no, I mean, I remember talking about, you know, this kid before. I mean, he's got a real opportunity here to, you know, be the punter of the Chargers. You know, the opportunity is right in front of him. He just has to seize it. But yeah, no, I think there's no question about the fact that the Chargers are going to bring in at least a couple of more guys to breed some competition at the punter position, because they can't have what they had last year. All those short fields for the defenses, I mean, it's bad, you know. That kind of stuff has to get fixed. And so, you know, hopefully this kid, you know, can come in and take a job. I know they also brought in a guy from the CFL I believe they signed him to a futures contract. I don't remember his name at the moment, but that's another kid that kind of keep an eye on as far as the punter position. But hey, lo and behold, rest assured, there will be a new punter for the Chargers next year.
Yeah, I definitely don't think that they're bringing back Donnie Jones. And hey, this guy was the leading punter all time at Notre Dame, so he definitely was worth taking a chance on. And we're talking about, you know, long field, short fields, because the Chargers were doomed by the opponent having short fields to work with and putting the defense in a really bad position last year so many times. And what Jack Nolan said was, hey, if there's anything he needs to work on, it's just his touch around the goal line. But as far as kicking it far, you never have to worry about that with him. So I am excited to see a better punter from the Chargers, as crazy as that seems. I am excited to hopefully have a guy to be excited about that's just going to start booming 60-yard punts. We don't know that's going to happen, but I would be very excited if it did, because we just haven't had that guy since Mike Seifers, really, where you just, I mean, every Charger fan loved Mike Seifers. There was just nothing not to love. He was a great punter for so long with the Chargers. But hey, punter talk can be exciting. I think that's what we're learning here today, which is a very important lesson for all you kids out there. But we do have two more segments to get into, and it's going to be Matt Williamson, host of the Locked On NFL podcast, talking with John Kegley about all things Chargers. I think you guys are really going to like the interview that he had with him coming up right after this. But first, another thing that you guys can be excited about is upping your game in the bedroom. Now, listen, you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed right now with BlueChew.com. That's blue like the color blue. Blue Chew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever the opportunity arises. Blue Chew is prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package. So no in-person doctor visits that you don't want to have that conversation. No waiting in the pharmacy. And since you don't have to go to the pharmacy and they're shipping it directly to you, it's much cheaper than you would normally get it. Right now, we have a special deal for our listeners. If you visit BlueChew.com and get your... You can get your first shipment for free when you use the special promo code LOCKEDON. Just pay $5 in shipping to get that first order. It's really awesome, guys. It's going to change your bedroom life for the better. So that's BlueChew.com, BlueChew.com, promo code LOCKEDON. BlueChew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring this podcast.
John Kegley from Locked On Chargers joins me for the first time and long overdue. John, how are you, dude?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about it because I have a lot of strong takes on the Chargers. First of all, I think they have the best roster in their division, maybe in the AFC overall.
I would agree with that. There's a lot of people that have put articles out that have said the Chargers have the best roster in the NFL. Even above, like, Rams and stuff like that. So I can see where you're coming from. I would agree with it. With how stacked we are everywhere, this roster is built for the playoffs. The problem I have is the offensive line. I don't think that's where we're strong. Even the defensive line, even though we just got Jerry Tillery, that's still the question. But offensive line is the biggest question. So that's where I would say that's where it goes from being a playoff roster to being a Super Bowl roster.
Yeah, it's on my list of things to discuss, and it is my biggest concern as well, and we will get to that here in a moment. But there's a couple more abstract things with this team that scares me, and there's a lot of positive I'm going to bring up, but I started by saying it's a great roster. But historically, special teams has always kind of let this team down, and I will concede it was better last year. But it's been a trend over the Rivers era, and I think it's been something that's held him back more than people realize. And maybe more than that, and an easier thing to put my finger on, is the lack of a home field advantage is a massive obstacle for this team.
Well, to talk about home field advantage, I wouldn't say it's completely an obstacle. Even when they were in San Diego, there was always more of the opposing fans than there was the home field fans, unless it was the 2006 or 2007 season when they went 14-2, or when they went 11-5 and were making their way towards the AFC championship. But other than that, it has always been the opposing fans there. So I would say that home field advantage isn't really the worry. I would say the only thing that bothers the players would be, hey, we're at our own home field, but no one's showing up for us. So I felt like in the beginning that was something that bothered them and made them a little bit depressed. And they had a better road record, which I think has to go towards that fact that there's no home field fans. But when you're on the road, you know you're going up against all the other team's fans, and you feel like it's you against the world, and that motivates you. And I think that's why they play better on the road. But at home, I don't think it really is much of a difference, because even if they say, let's say they had that whole stadium full of Charger fans, it's still not that loud to make that home field advantage.
Yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying. My point is, though, if I'm any team in the league, I'd much rather go to L.A. to play the Chargers than Kansas City to play the Chiefs, or Denver to play the Broncos, or the Black Hole even. I mean, those are difficult, difficult places to play. And I mentioned it with, I bring things back to the Steelers too often, but the Steelers are going to L.A. this year to play the Chargers, and it's going to be feel like a home game for Pittsburgh.
It's no different than what it was in San Diego, as I brought up before.
I guess you're right. Yeah, it hasn't changed that much.
I went to the Chargers-Steelers game in San Diego when they were here, and the stadium was at least 97% Steelers fans. When Le'Veon Bell scored the game-winning touchdown, the whole stadium jumped in the air. It was like everyone was a flash mob and jumped in the air. It was very few Charger fans. It's going to be the same thing there. And I even tried to get myself a ticket early, but I know they're going to get it more expensive as we go on. The cheapest ticket already on StubHub, Ticketmaster, wherever you go, is already at like $300-something.
Wow, that doesn't surprise me. When you get them, send them here, and I'll send them. I'll shop them around my neighborhood. We'll make a good buck on it.
That's how it's done around here.
Yeah, let's talk Philip Rivers a little bit here. I mean, pretty much over his career, I have been a massive Rivers supporter. I've gone so far as to say that I think he's the most underrated player of this generation, and I think over the last few years he's starting to get his due, so I'm not sure that he falls under that criteria anymore. But I also think that a little too much is asked of him, and part of that is comes back to the O-line conversation, which we'll certainly get to, and part of it is just that as good as he has been this past year, I felt like when it mattered most on the road late in the year, he started to look like an older quarterback. And to no fault of his own, I just think that too much is on his plate when you compare him to Breeze, Ben, Brady, and the wear and tear on his body and having to make huge throw after huge throw is a lot to ask for a quarterback of that age.
Well, the thing I would argue is it's also that offensive line, as you brought up, when to actually sit in the pocket and let plays develop, when we saw that in the beginning of the year, when they actually looked pretty good, at the offensive line did, that is. He was completing some passes here and there, and it was gaining yards up the field, and eventually that big play came. But later on during the year, when the offensive line was getting beat up, there was guys already in Rivers' face. The Kansas City game in Kansas City, for example, Chris Jones was in Rivers' face within like half a second, and he has to hurry up and throw that somewhere. So I wouldn't say it's so much age. I would say it's the team around him that sometimes affects him. Compared to past years, he's actually looked a lot better with decision-making and making his throws. So even 2 years ago, the first year in L.A., he was just throwing the ball deep whenever he could. Even if it was in triple coverage, he was doing it because he felt he had to make that play. Even if the game's only a four-point game, he felt like he had to make that play. And then if you want to go to even the Mike McCoy era, everybody gave up on Mike McCoy, so Philip Rivers had to do something with that ball. So he threw a lot of picks. He threw a lot of jump balls to try to make something happen. It just wasn't happening with Mike McCoy's way of coaching and his way of being around the players. So I would argue that I don't think it's age. I think it's just the team around him or the coaches around him. You even brought up special teams earlier where, like, Donnie Jones was not given that good of a punt game last year for us. So the defense already had their back on their heels, but if they made a stop, Rivers was already backed up on his own goal line because that bad punting that happened. This year, we're going to probably have Tyler Newsome from Notre Dame. He's going to be the new punter, and he's a young guy, so that's probably new hope for us. Can't be much worse than Donnie Jones, honestly. So I would argue it's the team around him.
Yeah, I lean that way too, and maybe it came out of my mouth a little bit wrong because I am a huge Rivers supporter. And he will never go down without a fight. I mean, he's going to stay in the pocket as long as he possibly can. He's going to take the big hit. If it calls for it, he's going to put the football in harm's way. If they're down and they have to win, he's the ultimate competitor. And just one more special teams note, really over the last half dozen years or so, Mike Sando brings this up a lot, who's my guest on Thursdays, that according to like ESPN's rankings and Football Outsiders rankings, they're almost always at the bottom of the league. And we've had some really poor field goal kicking over the last few years. Not as bad lately, you know, not as bad last year. You mentioned the punting. Those things are hard to overcome if you're any quarterback. And it's, you know, a bad O-line play and bad special teams puts him in a hole an awful lot.
Yeah, to give some examples of it, we can go to 2010, I think it was, when we were leading the league and blocked punts with just within the first 6 weeks. And even though Rivers was putting up maybe 34, 27 points, somewhere around there, the bad punting, the punts blocked, whatever you want to call it, was giving the other team's offense a 20-yard field to work with, a 30-yard field to work with. So even though Rivers was putting up 34 points, the defense is giving up points because they don't have a field to work with. And then last year you brought up the field goal kicking. Caleb Sturgis was just horrible. He's missing extra points left and right, missing field goals. I remember in Seattle, I was in Seattle for the game, and I saw Rivers on one of the replays doing his little head shake and all upset when Caleb Sturgis missed another extra point. And I'm just like, when is this guy going to be gone? We had Michael Badgley for there for a little while, and he was doing good. And once we kept him, field goals improved greatly. So field goals probably won't be a problem next year, and hopefully punting's not either. But you brought up stuff like offensive line. If we had an offensive line that could run, like when LT was here, remember Rivers didn't have to put a lot on his shoulders back then. It was let LT run the ball. We could let Melvin Gordon run the ball and Austin Ekeler, and then Rivers can throw a pass here and there to keep linebackers and the team honest. And it takes stuff off of Rivers' shoulders, but we haven't had that running game.
We are back. And sticking on the offensive side of the ball, I did want to talk about two skill position guys with you, John. Hunter Henry's return is gigantic for me. I think this is a great young player on the verge of a massive breakout and maybe a perennial Pro Bowl type of guy. And Mike Williams, to me, is kind of been forgotten a little bit. I mean, this was a very early pick who's very talented, and maybe he hasn't had the volume because of the, you know, Keenan Allen and all the other guys around them, but I think he has star potential too.
Well, you mentioned that he's been forgotten, but there was an article by Chargers Wire and USA Today that brought up some Pro Football Focus stats, and one of those stats they brought up was Mike Williams. And it had to do with his intermediate routes grade. He had a 68.6% intermediate catch rate last year, which is pretty good. It was the 10th best, I believe, if they said it was, in the league, according to Pro Football Focus. So this guy is going to be catching those 10 to 15, even 20-yard routes, which means you can get first downs on third down, which keeps drives alive. And usually when guys are like that, they don't really get the recognition they deserve because they just catch maybe a few passes a game to complete those third downs, since you don't complete 13 third downs a game. So guys like Keenan Allen, who are completing a first down slant for a first down, or catching those toe-dragging touchdowns, or even Travis Benjamin and Tyrell Williams last year that were catching the deep touchdowns, they're getting all the credit. But Mike Williams is being recognized on Pro Football Focused for catching these intermediate routes, which are third down situation type of routes. And then with Hunter Henry coming back this year, he could probably be that guy as well, if not help open up Mike Williams even more by drawing some double teams or even short routes like Hunter, like Antonio Gates would do. Antonio Gates would just do a quick little out and hook, and two guys would get on him, and that would open up another wide receiver. So Hunter Henry could be that focus too, including hitting a seam route over the middle to get Hunter Henry into space and running.
Yeah, I think that's well said, because I think Henry brings that vertical dynamic that was missing, you know, in since Gates' prime, which was a couple years back, of course. But I also think he brings reliability, not to the Gates-Rivers mind meld that they had. I feel like the signing of Tyrod Taylor basically said that's going to have to wait another day. You know, that if Rivers goes down, we're at least competitive for a little while with Tyrod. Maybe that every year you talk about when are you going to find the quarterback of the future, and you pick late in the round, those things are hard to do, and I feel like they just have to wait down the road because we're a contender, and so be it, and someday, like the Giants, that bottom will fall out and we'll deal with it then. But in the meantime, we're going to ride the guy we got.
Well, we did get Easton Stick, who
compared he's to the interesting.
Other fourth, fifth, sixth round guys you've gotten, like the Brad Sorensens and all those guys. He actually looks pretty decent on film and on paper. This guy has a great in-the-pocket passer rating. He was one of the top ones in college football last year. You just don't hear about him because he's a FCS, not a FBS. And he can move out of the pocket. He can be that rollout guy. He can use his legs. He's no Michael Vick or Cam Newton, but he can still be a mobile quarterback, which is something we're lacking. So could Easton Stick probably be that future guy? He could be. He couldn't be. But he is someone that you should watch. And if you like him in preseason, he could stick around for a little while and be that next guy for Rivers to teach up.
Stick is interesting, and let's talk about the draft class here, next segment here real quick, but I think you might even be selling him short as an athlete. I mean, I think he could have some Taysom Hill to Drew Brees qualities, and I have mixed feelings about that usage because I don't want the ball ever not snapped to Drew Brees or Phillip Rivers, but I think he's tough, smart, and athletic like Hill. He took over for Carson Wentz, won a ton of games. It's just something to file back in your memory that don't be shocked if he carries the ball here and there early in his career and you just find a way to use him, you know? And so I really like that pick. I don't know that he'll ever be Rivers' successor as sit in the pocket and gun the ball all over the field, big, strong, arm-strapping guy like Rivers. But I do think Stick could help sooner than later, possibly.
Probably more of a Russell Wilson type, I would say, with his height and his ability to roll out of the pocket and use his legs. I'd say he'd be more of the Russell Wilson type compared to the Drew Brees, Phillip Rivers type that sits in the pocket and guns it left and right. I think he's going to be that guy that fakes a handoff, sits in the pocket, and then if nothing's there within the first 2 seconds, he rolls out, and now he can see up and down the field because he doesn't have these 7-foot offensive linemen in his way, and he can make the play outside the pocket. I think he'd be that type of guy.
Yeah, I don't think that's far-fetched either. And again, very successful, lower-level competition. Wouldn't surprise me if he's active on game day and maybe even helps on special teams, you know, some of those type of things. I'm critical, and it's easy to sit here at my bar Monday afternoon and say, boy, the Chargers should have done more to help their offensive line. That being said, taking Jerry Tillery at 28... and then Nasir Adderley at 60. I mean, to me, to almost complete this defense and make it even stronger up the middle when it was so good on the edges to begin with, I can't be critical of those two selections. But in an overview, if you see what I'm saying, I would have loved to seen him go O-line early and often, but not at the expense of taking Tillery or Adderley. You know what I'm saying? So I'm kind of talking out both sides of my mouth.
Well, I was in that same situation because when we were doing our mock drafts for the show, I wanted him to take Cody Ford, but I was saying on the show, I was like, I don't think Cody Ford is going to be there in the first round, but if he is, I think you got to take him because I thought Jerry Tillery is going to get picked before us as well. And in the end, Cody Ford fell deep into the second round, and I'm thinking we could trade up and get this guy, but Nasir Adderley was probably going to get picked before he gets to us, so we got to go Cody Ford. But then Adderley fell all the way to us as well. So now you're just, okay, which one do we do here? Do we take offensive line or go Adderley? But you cannot argue with those picks. Even though I did hear today that Nasir Adderley has an undisclosed injury, so I'm waiting to hear more on that.
I didn't hear that. That might explain that why you last a 60.
Yeah, that already worries me right there. But Tillery, as we just lost Darius Filon, is a great pickup, athletic defensive tackle. We needed that, especially since we are pretty bad at stopping the run up the middle. Now we have Thomas Davis, the veteran linebacker, to help out. We should be really good at stopping the run now with that draft pick. And Nasir Adderley, we needed a safety. We needed that free safety to take over Jahlil Adai's spot after we cut him because Jahlil Adai was a weakness. So it is a great pick. My thing is we did go offensive line third round, but the guy they went with was Trey Pipkins, which is a pick I do not like.
Yeah, we'll get to him here in a minute. And it's funny because you happened to bring up Chris Jones earlier in the show for the Chiefs up-and-coming star. I see a lot of Jones in Tillery. I mean, long, huge hands, long arms, highly disruptive, athletic, good change of direction, interior pass rush. You already got the edge pass rushers. So I think he's an instant impact guy. And Adderley, I think he'll be the free safety to complement Derwin, so Derwin can stay closer to the line of scrimmage. But I also think Adderley, he has some corner traits, could come down and cover the slot if need be. He could be man coverage guy. I think he's more than just a deep center field player.
He definitely could be a more than a deep center field player, but he's what we need is a deep center field player.
Yes,
that's what
yes.
we need to put him at. We already have Casey Hayward, Desmond King, Trevor Williams, even Michael Davis improved last year. He got really good after he learned to turn his head around on deep passes. Now you have Derwin James to be up at the line and stop the run or even bail out and stop some passes. So now you just missed that free safety guy. So I think you have no choice but to put him there. But say a young rising star, like say Rayshon Jenkins, shows some traits of being that free safety and you want to move Azeer Adderley around a little bit to try some stuff out, you could do that. If somebody gets hurt, you can use him there if it's a glaring weakness. But as of right now, he needs to be that free safety guy. And he could maybe even be a kick returner. But hearing about an injury now I'm kind of skeptical on whether to even put him in that situation to get hurt on a kickoff.
Yeah, that's a good point. But he is known as an exceptional special teamer. The trend of the draft to me was getting athletic playmakers up the middle of the defense. Talked about Tillery, talked about Adderley, who will probably play a lot of deep middle. Drew Tranquil can also really, really want run. A super-duper athlete for his position, too, in the fourth round. Probably doesn't have to play right away. And I also like Broughton a lot, the defensive tackle from Cincinnati, who's more of a also upfield three technique. I mean, he's shorter, doesn't look like Tillery, but I thought that was a steal in the last for their last pick.
And before I talk about him, I want to give credit to our co-host on Lockdown Chargers, Daniel Wade, who actually predicted that the Chargers would get him in the seventh round.
Oh, really?
So I want to give a props that we brought up a draft profile on him. We were talking about some guys we think could be a guy to draft, and Wade said he would be a guy that we could get, and we ended up getting him. So I agree with you. He is an absolute steal. This is a powerful guy. He could be that type of guy that you say, hey, you take this gap, and you explode through it. That is your only job. You do it, and he will do it. And that can do something as small as make a running back change direction real quick and let everybody else catch up to him, or even make that running back run backwards and everyone catches up to him. Something like that could be so simple to disrupt the play, and he can do it. And you got him in the seventh round, and you brought up Tranquil as well. With how athletic he is, he could be the new Da'Tavis Brown when he first came into the league. Da'Tavis Brown was really good at covering the passes before he got that injury. He took a few steps back. But he could be that guy, and we just got rid of Kyle Emanuel, who was not that great at covering in space. And he could probably take Kyle Emanuel's spot and improve that greatly.
Yeah, and let's wrap this thing up, John. But again, yes, they did draft a tackle. Maybe he's a better prospect than I knew because, frankly, I didn't know much about Trey Pipkins coming from a tiny school until the Chargers pulled the trigger on him with the 91st pick overall. But to put it kindly, this one's going to take some time if he pays off.
Yeah, he is definitely a developmental guy.
Yeah.
I actually read somewhere that he's supposed to be our future or backup left tackle. So that alone bothers me because our weakness is right tackle with Sam Tevi or mm-hmm. your left guard with Dan Feeney. Those two positions are
They've
what you
rough.
Need to fix.
Yeah.
And you instead make a backup left tackle behind our strongest offensive lineman, Russell Okun. So that makes no sense to me at all. And this guy played for a small school. Yeah, he looked really good in the Senior Bowl and in some Senior Bowl workouts during the practices leading up to the Senior Bowl. But he's also a guy that's going to be pretty slow and not used to NFL-type speed. And wasn't a guy exactly we needed. And if you were going to get him, say the Chargers thought, hey, this guy's pretty good, we could probably develop him, you should have got him in the later rounds. I don't think anybody was even looking at this guy in the third round. And the Chargers do have a history of drafting some pretty bad third rounders. So I'm wondering if he's the next guy that's going to be that bad third round pick.
Yeah, it scares me too. I mean, again, I love them going offensive line there after the two studs they took, but he wouldn't have been my choice. Or trade up for Ford and mortgage the future a little bit. I mean, to be a little more aggressive, just kind of sitting back and taking a developmental tackle was not been the move I would have made there.
All right, guys. Well, that's going to do it for today's show. We want to thank Matt Williamson for having John Kegley on his show and for giving us some great content. for this show because that really was a good interview and I enjoyed it. So I know you guys enjoyed it as well. We'll be back with you guys tomorrow. But until then, make sure to follow us on Twitter at LockedOnLAC and to like the Facebook page Locked On Chargers. And to get the podcast before everyone else, make sure you're subscribing to the podcast, but don't just subscribe anywhere. Get the brand new Himalaya podcasting app. Every podcast that you love is on there, even the Locked On Chargers podcast. They have tastemakers that will curate playlists of podcasts that are just to your liking. It's really the best new thing around, guys. So make sure to download the Himalayan app and to subscribe to the Locked On Chargers podcast. Also, if you want to get your questions on the show, like we had Sean Pecks today, make sure to call into the Locked On Chargers voicemail line. The number is 323-524-7924. We play every call on the show, no matter what. So make sure if you want to get on the Locked On Chargers to call into the Locked On Chargers voicemail line. Well, we'll be back with you guys tomorrow. Take it easy and go Bolts.